Leonard knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody who worked for Wainwright Industries, and that is how things get done on the Moccasin Telegraph. The guy who was known to the guy who knew the guy who worked for Clarence said that Digger often frequented the Jimtown Bar, north of the reservation on Sunday nights. We parked Res Dog in the lot at the corner of the bar, in which the stools were bolted to the concrete floor, to dissuade patrons from beating one another to death with them, and where I hoped the damn truck would start if need be. No more than 3 minutes later, a one-ton turbo diesel, dually, that probably tipped the scale at over $100,000, pulled into the parking lot, nudging up to the building as if it might move it. Digger Wainwright literally glowed in his pressed white dress shirt and silver-belly hat, ducking his head for no apparent reason as he pulled open the heavy front door and went in. "I guess we aren't going to do it before." "He moves fast for a little guy." We sat there in the silence for a while. "So, where is Jaya?" "Locked in her aunt's basement, awaiting transport to either a penal colony in Western Australia or a military school in the Deep South."
"She was with Harley Wainwright?"
"Not confirmed, but assumed."
"These Wainwright guys do a lot of teepee creeping."
He unbuckled his seatbelt and cracked the passenger side door.
"Let us go."
I watched as Henry slipped out. He closed the door and looked at me through the window that had fallen into the door.
"What, you're bored?"
"I was out all last night, and I do not intend to be out all tonight."
"We're getting older."
I reached back and petted Dog one last time, and then climbed out the scaly door of the beat-to-shit truck, the lengths I'm willing to go for our undercover efforts. We walked toward the front entrance.
"If you said nice things to her, she would run better."
"I'm not sweet-talking your crappy truck." I pulled the door open, a blue cigarette haze following the swing. "You think this is the only bar in Montana that still allows smoking?" He said nothing, and I followed him in. I was pleasantly surprised that the Jimtown bar had undergone a makeover and now had such luxuries as stools that moved, gambling machines, a television, a pool table, and what was referred to as the bitchin' kitchen. Things are looking up.
"It was that or burn it down."
There were only 5 patrons. The bartender smiled broadly at the Cheyenne Nation. He put a hand on the bear's shoulder.
"Henry Standing Bear, man, what brings you all the way out here?"
"I heard this was the toughest bar in Montana."
He gestured around him.
"Not anymore, man. We got civilized."
"A casino, huh?"
"Gotta make money."
He glanced at me. "You the sheriff guy?"
"Off duty, so I guess I'm just a guy."
We shook. "Walt Longmire."
"Gary Pine. I engage in adult supervision when the owner's not here."
Henry leaned in.
"Now that you mention it, we are looking for a guy. Digger Wainwright?"
"Oh, shit, man." He glanced around. "He's here, probably hassling Barbara in the back."
"Barbara?"
"The cook."
A lip pointed through the pickup window toward what I assumed was the kitchen. "When he can't find a target out here, he heads back there."
"Mind if we talk to him?"
"Only if you promise to get him out of there. I'm waiting on 2 cheeseburgers and a tray of mini burritos."
He gestured once again toward the end of the bar where a set of swinging doors braced the doorway. Henry led the way as we made for the opening and peered over the slatted doors where Digger had the cook backed up against the counter, both her hands full with orders. His hands were on her waist, and every time she moved, he moved with her, in what I'm sure he thought was an amusing rumba move. The bear turned to me, speaking in a more than loud enough voice.
"Do you suppose this is why we are not getting our cheeseburgers?"
Wainwright turned to see us, dropping his head and stepping away from the relieved woman, who took advantage of the situation to escape between us and into the bar at large.
"Mr. Wainwright, we'd like to speak with you."
He hitched his thumbs into his creased jeans, turning toward us but still not making eye contact.
"I think me and my family have spoken to you about as much as we intend to."
"Well, some new information has come to light, and I think it might be best if we had a little chat." He walked towards us.
"I need to make a quick visit to the boys' room, if you two don't mind."
"Certainly."
We all walked back toward the main room, where he went in the bathroom, and I gestured toward a booth in the corner, away from everyone else.
"You want to set up camp?"
"No. I would rather go stand by his truck to make sure he does not take to the air."
I was planning on doing that.
he grumbled as he made his way toward the booth. You always get to have the fun. Turning, I went outside and leaned against the $5,000 grill guard. After a requisite 3 minutes, he appeared through the door at a fly, the locks disengaging with a chirp behind me as he hit the button on his key fob. Howdy! He froze, looking first at me and then for another avenue of escape. Forget about us? No, I've got some medication in the truck I need to get. Okay. I followed him to the door and stood in the way of him closing it as he made a show of looking around in the center console, where a shiny 10mm handgun lay among the detritus. His hand paused over it. I wouldn't do that if I were you. He turned to look at me as he pulled his cell phone from his pocket. I've already called Gordo Hansen, and he's got a deputy on his way over here. Good, they can join in the conversation. He blew out a considerable amount of air and looked at me skeptically. Concerning? Genie One Moon?